in a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, I'm the columnist with my own theme song, Casso. This is John Cass, the Chicago Way, Jeff Carlin behind the glass, the mastermind of this operation, and Will Lee sitting next to me, my leg man. But when you hear this, he'll be my ex-leg man. Will Lee going off, flying out of the nest. Fly, little bird, fly. Will, come on.
And back into that troubled waters known as Chicago.
Check you out. Mr. Irvin's, I almost said smartass.
Yeah.
Right?
Who, me?
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right, so we got things to talk about today. It'll be the Will Lee farewell tour. I'm gonna start, I don't want to start crying, so yeah. I won't cry.
Yeah.
I'll just be a man about it. We've got the Super Bowl coming, the Super Bowl this weekend. Mm-hmm. I got to make something, maybe lamb shanks. We've got Rand Paul dropping out of the presidential race, and that pisses me off because that's the guy I liked.
You did. You liked him from the very beginning.
Right?
Yeah.
I liked the guy who talked about urban decline. I liked the guy who talked about cutting the military and social programs. I liked the guy who was an actual conservative who took the Constitution seriously. And now what do we have? Mm-hmm. I hear I cannot use the phrase admitted socialist. So I'll just say kind of a socialist, Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm.
I believe he calls it a democratic socialist, if there's a difference.
Yeah, right. Is there a difference between a Democrat and a socialist?
Well, there is, but he's the
resident liberal of this group.
Resident liberal. I'm more central than any center, okay. but he said democratic liberal, which means people voted him to, or democratic socialist, which means people voted him to be a socialist.
So they made him one. They made him take that honeymoon to Moscow. When Brezhnev was in power,
right? It's essentially like saying the Nazis were democratic Nazis. Essentially, people voted them into power.
I see. Okay, whatever. And then we've got Hillary, and now what's her theme song now? Now she's going so far to the left, she's going to start singing Pete Seeger songs, right?
Something like that.
And then I read somewhere, Will, did I read this right, or maybe someone said it that the Bernie Sanders people should not. Boo Hillary.
Right.
I think I saw that in a newspaper. I can't believe that. I'm not going to say. I'm just saying. I can't believe that.
No, we don't want to.
Really? What happened to free speech?
You don't want a nasty primary,
But is it our job to tell people what to believe or how to act? No, I don't think so. But it was interesting.
You don't think that's good rally decorum not to boo?
I think people should say what the hell they want to say. Because you know what? Last time I checked, this is the good old United States of America.
America.
That's right. And we can say what we want. But right now I'm going to say this. I'm sad that Rand Paul is out of the race. It breaks my heart because I saw what happened to him. Donald Trump saw that, and the establishment saw Rand Paul poised to take on this outsider role, and they didn't want that. So they unleashed the barbarian. Trump comes out. They don't say anything. They don't knock him down. They don't put him in his place. They don't use all their power and juju to stop him, thinking that Donald Trump will flame out and our guy Jeb Bush will be poised to take over. Well, guess what happened? I don't think where's Jeb now, Willie?
Well, is he in New Hampshire with everyone else hanging out with, trying to jump?
Yeah, I think he went to South Carolina. He's skipping New Hampshire.
Oh.
I should think, like I think someone said, he's in a Chili's parking lot, crying, listening to oldies radio, the Eagles singing The New Kid in Town. Mm-hmm. And he's by himself with his little Bushian lip trembling. Mm-hmm. So Rand Paul's out. That is quite depressing.
Can you imagine Jeb Bush's Thanksgiving this year with the rest of the family?
Oh, my. Like, you failed, Jeb.
Yeah. We got, what, 4%? Not even? Whatever it was, 2% in Iowa? Oh, come on.
Come on, Jeb.
Well, there's more going on. Mike Huckabee suspended his campaign, too. No one's talking about that.
Via Twitter.
Like anyone cares about that one? The Rand Paul one hurts because that was the guy who could have reshaped politics in this country. and reshape conservatism, and clearly the Republican Party didn't want that. So that's what they deserve. Now they deserve to kneel before the barbarian. I love it now because they will.
The barbarian, is that Trump?
Trump, right? Oh, right. Isn't he kind of like Attila the Trump or something? Attila the Trump? Isn't he?
He was, except I don't think Attila the Hun ever lost.
No, he didn't lose it. Attila the Hun never lost in Iowa, but can you imagine those senators and congressmen and K Street boys from Washington all running to get on their knees before Trump if he's in? You know it's going to happen, right? And he'll cut a deal, won't he, Will?
Well, he has to cut a deal because he's going to have to, you know, actually, well, of course, if he has to get there, but if he does, he's as the leader of the party, he's going to have to be the guy who they come to, you know, with their gifts in hand, you know, and
our veils. Fealty. Absolutely. And then they touch their forelocks and then foreheads to the ground. Okay, we're done with that. It's just depressing, Ken. The podcast, The Chicago Way, that's what you're listening to. Is now officially up on WGN Plus. You can find the links. I guess we'll put them up somewhere. They are up somewhere.
Yeah, check us. John's Twitter is always a good way to go.
Yeah, at @John_Cass. You can find it there or on my two Facebook pages. Someday I'll explain why I have two. It's just too bizarre of a story. Basically, I'm too much of a wimp to not friend people or to not. I don't want to say I don't want to be your friend.
Sure.
So I just open it all up because who are you going to pick? I'm full up on friends, so I started a new one. But on Facebook, when I talked about the Chicago Way podcast, I said hypothetically, and I think I misspelled it, hypothetically, if there was someone with a podcast on Facebook friends, what question would you ask? And you know what? On both pages, a lot of people joined in.
Sure.
So I think we should make this a regular feature. Jeff, in his dramatic Jeff Carlin reading voice, will ask the questions and read your name. So,
dun dun dun
dun right. Dun dun. Mm-hmm. This question comes from John Minardi. John, are Greek weddings anything like the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
That's a good question. I really want to know about myself.
Yeah, I've been afraid to ask you that, John, forever because I thought that might be insensitive.
Why? I was on a radio show and a guy called Dan Prof said I was Greek lightning. And I was like, Dan, go on the bed. Let's talk about this.
Did he mean greased lightning? I'm confused.
I don't know what he was. I don't know what he meant. Anyway, okay. So is our Greek big fat Greek weddings like the movie? Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Windex on everything.
Windex on everything. An uncle telling you that every word is original. Every thought and deed originated with the ancient Greeks. We had our wedding. I ran into one of the bosses from Red Eye. You know Red Eye, that publication we put out, Tribune, it's for young people on the L in your sort of hipster land.
I've got my
there.
Copy right here.
But the older people read it, too.
And older people read it, too. And she's going to get married. I don't want to put her name out there because I don't know if she's announced it. But she's one of the people there, and she's going to get married. And I said, why don't you, instead of going to a hotel and paying all that money, why don't you go to a banquet hall? Because that's where you're going to get better food at a banquet hall. Mm-hmm. You duke the bartender a few $100. You keep the bar open when they close it.
Mm-hmm.
And people can have fun. And that's what we did. We had ours 30 years ago at a banquet. I got to come up with some present for Betty, by the way.
Oh, man.
I know, but I got some time. 30 years ago at a banquet hall. And that's exactly what happened. We had the civilized people and then our Americani friends.
I'm not familiar with that term.
You're an American Nike. You're an American. Right? So okay. It's like very, yes, I guess sometimes we could be clannish without meaning to.
Okay.
Will has been to my house for that. Is that how it is? Not for weddings, but for Easter and so forth.
No, I don't know how to take that because it's all very, I'm all very excited about everything. The food spread is outstanding and everyone is making me eat. And that's pretty much the way it's supposed to be.
It is. Everything in the Big Fat Greek Wedding is like real life, okay? That is my life, except I'm not a woman. But outside of that, the whole who are you going to get married to, all that stuff, it's all so true.
They're making a sequel, by the way, John.
Nia Vardalos.
Finally.
Finally. Have you sent a headshot over for maybe casting on that one?
Isn't Andrea doing something like some screening, Andrea Darlis?
Yes. Oh, she's trying. She's trying to set something up, and she wants you to be there as a guest of honor.
I'd love to. I'd love to. So, yeah, go. One thing about Greek weddings, when we throw the money on the dancers, that's not so your sister-in-law, who doesn't know anything, can say, oh, oh, look at all this money. I'll pick it up. It's not for you. It's for the orchestra. Okay?
Wait, throw the money on the dancers? I'm not familiar.
Okay. Yeah. In a Greek wedding, after the bride and groom dance and the family dances, then they open up the dance of the chora, the dancing, you know, in a circle dancing, mm-hmm. to everyone. And everyone comes up. And then if someone's leading the dance and you like that what they're doing, you take money and throw it up in the air over them so it showers over them. Ooh. Onto the ground. It's sort of like to keep, come on, orchestra, keep playing. This guy's dancing well.
I like that.
Right? Okay. And what happens is sometimes people think that they can pick it up. And then the orchestra stops playing, comes down and grabs it. So don't touch the money on the floor.
Good to know.
Okay.
All right. Any more? Let's go with some more questions.
Here's a good one, mm-hmm. From Robert Packman, or Packham, rather. Mm-hmm. What would Chicago be like if it weren't for the corruption?
It would be
Kansas.
I'm thinking of Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed, and what's that little town? Hello. Remember what's that town that he's from in the movie with the little angel? You know, every time a
It's
liberal,
a Wonderful Life.
Every time a tax is raised, the liberal gets his wings. And you hear that bell. What is that?
Google Bedford it. Falls.
Bedford Falls. That's it. It would be Bedford Falls without the corruption. We'd just be living, just loving each other, hugging, you know, eating brown rice out of wooden bowls, just like they do at the Heartland Cafe. And we'd be singing folk songs together. That's what it would be.
I love the Heartland Cafe.
I do, too.
Good stuff.
But where would you get your booze and your whores?
Your booze, your whores, your drugs, your gambling.
Yeah.
They would have like another part of town. It would be like on the other side of the river. Kind of like how like New Orleans, you know, it used to be when I was down there when I was in the Merchant Marine. That other side of the river.
Hmm.
Algiers or whatever they call it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like the sounds of this at all.
Yeah, that sounds... It doesn't sound as interesting, and I don't think the Tribune would thrive in a town like that.
I would not.
Red Eye would, but
yeah,
so tedious. I have to go and take a riverboat to the other side of town.
I'd like a town that, you know. How about this? A town run by the outfit, with stupid little people taking orders, and running the economy, and the taxpayers bleeding the taxpayers. Oh, that we already have that town.
Ooh.
It's called Chicago.
It feels like it's a home now.
Ooh.
Okay. Can I have all my money taken from me?
I don't know. The now Karen Lewis says if you cut any jobs, it's a call to war for the Chicago Teachers Union, right? Who's paying for that, Karen? Karen, newsflash, who pays for it? Come on, man.
Jeez.
Keep going.
So this comes from Bill Walker. Should psychics be given the same treatment as mimes, or is something a good deal more diabolical necessary?
Hmm. I haven't seen mimes for a while. I think because they know if they amongst them, you know, in their secret societies, they know that if they see Will Lee or me walking down the street, they run. But I have seen the silver guy.
Oh, yeah. The guy down there who's the statue. He's like the Tin Man.
Wouldn't you like to just admit it? Wouldn't you like to just smack that guy? I bet you people have. Right?
That's illegal.
Like, you're just standing there. Oh, really? I thought you were just a statue. Can I smack a statue? Give it a little cuff on the back of the head.
The John Cass podcast does not condone the acts of violence against members who are performing arts on the street.
Yes, if you're a busker, we don't want you to be assaulted by anybody.
No, I wouldn't. I didn't say that. Some other guy said it. Okay, next question.
This comes from Mary Lou Wilshick.
Mm-hmm.
If you were elected mayor of Chicago, what is the first thing you would do, John?
I would appoint you guys to be directors of Department of Revenue. You would be.
Me?
Jeff. Will would be the civilian police superintendent.
Oh, yes.
Nice.
All right?
Oh, my goodness.
And your first act as police superintendent would be what, Will?
Oh, I guess I'm cleaning the corners, I guess. You know, I'm busting heads. I'm not doing O.W. Wilson. No, I'm kidding.
Or would you do, like, let the guys on the corners sling in designated areas.
Just like, see, this is what happens when I let you see The Wire, because they're right. messes and you come up with these ideas.
Well, as if we never did that in Chicago, right?
Right.
Anybody been in the 15 an hour or two?
My goodness.
Right? Come on, let's admit it. All right? So what's wrong with that? These are the corners you could go on. Stay away from the taxpayers, all the junkies, everybody goes to you. It's kind of a...
But I want to give that to East Loop, to the West Loop, though. That's what we do. Give it to the West Loop. All of this stuff, all these, you know, these condos and Tony things, you guys can do it over here.
You'd return the first ward to its previous glory of being whores and drug addicts and opium dens?
I would be known as Bathhouse Billy. That's what I'd be.
Bathhouse Billy. Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. And as the Department of Revenue boss, you would also be in charge of the public library, Mr. Carlin. And I would have you have a book club, because you're reading what now? You're reading a book a day or something like this?
I'm trying to read a book a week.
A
book a week.
Oh, fancy.
Is that to make up for the fact that you're in radio where no one ever reads? Yeah.
I read
plenty.
Let's admit it,
man. You do.
Right.
Right?
I feel like I need more books in my life.
What are you reading now?
I'm just almost done with The Winter of Our Discontent.
John Steinbeck?
Yeah, I'm almost done with that.
Kind of uplifting and peppy, right?
Yes, very uplifting. Very, very uplifting. That's a good slice of Americana that...
I'll give you one. A book of short stories by... What the hell's his name? Raymond Carver. Who was so uplifting that I think he drank himself to death. But he was one of the best short story writers of our time. And he wrote a collection of short stories. One is called Will You Please Be Quiet, Please? Another is called What Do We Talk About When We Talk About Love? And a couple times I've tried to sneak his titles into my column and see if people notice. And some do.
That's awesome.
What do we talk about when we talk about race in Chicago? And Will said once, why are you repeating? You know, but that was for the
very cool.
Those are little tricks that I do just to keep myself sane. Is that weird?
No,
to admit that stuff on a podcast?
No, that's what the podcast is for, John.
All right, so keep going. Ask me another question.
Here we go, John. This is actually kind of a serious one, but Jerry Coglianese, John, how long will it take before they outlaw soccer because it's too rough?
Nice going, Jerry. Jerry hates soccer, and he hates
really?
That I write soccer. In that sense, Jerry Coglianese is like the editors of the Tribune. When I write a soccer column, which is what, once a month or once a every
quarter.
6 months?
Yeah, maybe.
Every couple of months.
What do the editors do, Will?
They kind of, do they wince and kind of, you know, like raise up their shoulders? Like, why is he doing that?
They whine like little babies. Come on. They're like, oh, soccer got him again. You know, that's what they do. And you know what? I like soccer, so too bad, Jerry. I love you, man. Jerry makes a great, my readers have great recipes, and we should get into recipes for them someday. Jerry makes a killer pepper and egg sandwich.
What's the secret to a good pepper and egg sandwich?
I don't know. There's another reader named Peter Bella, who's the cooking cop, and we should have him on. He's putting together a list of, I saw on Facebook, a recipe booklet, Facebook booklet or something, of Lenten foods that you can eat during Lent. Mm-hmm. And
definitely.
I don't think, according, you know, we're Orthodox, so I don't know if I can even eat eggs.
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually having worked on this project with you a couple of years ago, the perfect sandwich, I think the...
That was last year, or 2015.
It was about maybe 2 years ago. I think the catch is moist eggs. That was always it. It was like you can never have them too dry or anything like that. Katie Manker, former Tribune photo editor, her mom made some for us one time.
She did, didn't she?
And the eggs were absolutely perfect.
Katie brought them all the way down and... Because I had gotten, I think I went and bought a box, and I didn't expense it like a fool, but I went and bought like a huge box of pepper and eggs, right? Mm-hmm. Must have got 40 or 50 pepper and egg sandwiches, brought them to the city desk, everyone ate some. Katie Menker had one and goes, nah, not good enough.
Wow.
And her mom made it because Katie's really a good cook too. So, yeah.
Man, that's a good one. All right, John, here's a question. The Super Bowl food questions.
Yeah. What are you making?
Yeah, well, what are you making, and are you making your cast peppers? Want to give us the
pepper treats?
Yes.
Okay, get jalapeno peppers. Core them out. Use like a little, the back of a spoon or one of those kitchen knives that aren't, you know, that you have for dinner when you're eating meatloaf. You don't really need to cut it, and it's not very sharp, okay? And you core it out that way and rinse it out in the sink. Get that little strip of rind from inside the pepper. It's white. The pith, get that out too. Then take a mixture of half chorizo and half grated Mexican cheese. Mix that together. Take pitted dates, okay? And take each date and chop one in half. So in the beginning of the pepper, you put the one pitted date at the tip, then the chorizo and cheese mixture, then another half a pitted date, more mixture, and then another pitted date. So you have pitted date, which gives you the sweetness against the hotness of the pepper and the chorizo and the creaminess from the cheese. And then you wrap it in bacon, of course, right? That's Will's favorite vegetable.
Oh, yeah.
Right, your favorite vegetable. And you wrap that in bacon. And what I do is I put them on a smoker and smoke them. Or you can do it on a Weber, any kind of grill, but you have to have a drip pan so you catch the juices so you don't start a fire. Or you can do it in the oven. That is a killer. They're called they're really called Texas Dragon Turds. Gary Wivia told me about these.
Classic.
But I remember the first time I tried to write about Texas Dragon Turds, the managing editor of the paper and my wife conspired.
Not the same person.
No, two different women got together and said, he cannot call these things Texas Dragon Turds, not in the paper. So, what did I call them? Pepper treats?
Yeah, pepper
something
treats.
Something generic and Betty Crockery.
And more edible, I'd say.
Yeah, more enticing.
But they are good with a cold beer.
Sure. Amen to that.
Yeah, smoke them. You smoke them over, you know, smoke them until you see the pepper, when you cook it, the pepper kind of collapses.
Yeah, it shrivels up a little.
And then when the bacon's done, the inside's
done. So it's raw bacon on the outside, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pre-cooking your bacon.
I never use pre-cooked bacon. I never use pre-cooked shrimp. You were a fishmonger one time.
I was.
Do you ever use pre-cooked shrimp?
No, I don't. Did you catch that? I think it was a Reuters story, maybe an AP story, but
The slave shrimp.
The slave shrimp. Ugh.
Right, Ralph.
That was a very. It's
it makes you sad.
Yeah,
considering how much shrimp I eat. Yeah,
I used
definitely.
To. It's tons of shrimp, and now every time I look at a shrimp, now I'm like, oh man. And for those of you who didn't read this story, it was essentially that in the
Southeast Asia, Vietnam, and Thailand.
Yeah, that they're essentially people are held as slaves to peel and devein shrimp for ungodly hours and in ungodly conditions, and they get paid absolutely nothing, and people get sick and die in the facility, and they just keep working.
Terrible.
It's awful.
It's like Upton Sinclair, but it's shrimp in Asia.
Yeah, so after I read that, I'm kind of sworn off shrimp for a while.
I eat frozen, the best is the 15 count.
You 15.
They're big, but that's what you need. And frozen raw shrimp, not deveined.
Mm-hmm.
I devein my own shrimp because I need
that.
As do
I. As do I.
You devein your own too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Check them out.
Keep it for stock.
Keep it, not the veins.
No.
But you need the shell if you're going to make any kind of sauce. You need that shell.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's already been cooked, what does it matter?
Yeah.
It's not going to give you sauce. Right?
Cooking with Cass.
There you go.
So, John, so you sat down today with or had breakfast at the Billy Goat?
Yeah, Roper, Good Day Chicago is a Channel 32 product.
Fox Chicago.
I forgot what it's
morning
called.
Show.
So they called me, and I always send all my those media requests to Will because he knows where I'm supposed to be. Now that I'm losing Will, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do.
It's your day planner.
What is that, some kind of book?
Yeah.
Is it better than matchbooks in your pocket? Yeah. You know I'm going to miss all these appointments, Will.
Let's hope
not. So I went down there. Roper was down there, Rich Roper. And he starts talking, and, you know, it was nice to see him. And he starts talking, like, the show starts. And it's online. You can see it online. I tweeted it out. So he starts talking about something, like, newsy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I interrupt the host, but I didn't mean to, but it was fun. Can you imagine two newspaper reporters, two newspaper columnists in the Billy Goat talking news? Like, man, no one ever thought of that before. Right?
What a scene.
Right, but we were having breakfast. There was no vodka. It was breakfast, and for $5.50, you get a pepper, you get a sandwich with real bacon, eggs, and cheese, a big Kaiser roll made by Nonda, and a cup of coffee. Beat that.
Yeah.
Beat that deal.
Can't beat that.
Huh?
I got yogurt and a hot tea down in the first floor of the Tribune Tower here, and it cost me $6.50. So I got screwed.
Yeah, $5.50 for there's a lot of good. We should do a thing. We should put it out. Okay, I will put it out on Facebook for next time. What's the best breakfast in Chicago? Mm. Where can you get a good breakfast deal? I got two. I like the Billy Goat. I like Melly. Melly's a great restaurant for breakfast. There's one on Halston and one on the Loop. And I like Butterfields. You ever go to Butterfields?
Yeah.
Out in the suburbs?
In Naperville, right?
Right. We did that thing there.
Right.
Yeah, I know Nick Kumalis is a friend of mine, good guy, and a great breakfast. So, yeah, we should put that out for next week. We'll be asking you. So if you're listening, you already know.
What are you writing what are you writing for this week?
Well, I got to give myself a mutza.
Oh, yeah? That's right.
You know what that is, right? The mutza is the Greek hand signal of disgust. It's like a bleep you, but it's a mutza, which is not sexual. Basically, it's go to hell, mm-hmm. but not hell. Because what day, I missed the whole end of January. We always give the mutza at the end of the month.
Yeah.
We're already into February. I forgot it. I have to give myself a mutza right here. Ow. Nah, and one to you, Will. Nah, to you too.
Oh, you can give it as long as it's the very beginning of the month, I say. These are the rules that we establish.
What rules did you just make up now? That we could give the mutza of the month in the middle of February for January?
In the middle? Come on.
What am I? How'd you let me forget that? This is how we really work the column. Right? Will?
Yeah.
What are your plans for the weekend?
Well, I never know what to do about the Super Bowl because sometimes it's just too hyped. You know what I mean? Like, it's like really there's no fun to it anymore now that they showed the ads days in advance.
Yeah.
And really that was the whole thing. Remember years ago, just maybe 5 or 10 years ago, you really had to still wait.
Because what? Is Danica Patrick going to get naked now? She's already 60. Do you care?
She's not 60.
Whatever. You know what I mean? Enough with the Danica Patrick. Am I going to get naked? Really? Those commercials. I'm going to not watch the Super Bowl. I'm going to be making lamb shanks for everybody watching the Super Bowl.
Nice.
Lamb shanks, brown them, put them in a pan on a bed of garlic, and I kid you not, 40 to 50 pieces of garlic peeled.
Wow.
Brown them first, put them in a pan, okay. Add, you know, season them however you want. Add a mixture of lemon zest, olive oil, and oregano. It's called Lava Lemono.
This is the Greek trifecta right there?
And you
there?
Pour that. It's the trilogy, baby. That's all you need. And you pour that on the lamb. Then you add a cup of water. And after you brown them, and you cover them tightly with tinfoil. Then you take that bake it for like till tender, say about an hour and a half, say about 2.5 hours, lamb shanks. Do it right at low temperature. Take the lamb out. Defat the pan, then you deglaze it, take the defatted juices, put them back in the pan with orzo, stuffed tomato, like a stewed tomato that you break up with your hands, and water, and bake. In that pan with the juices, it's a killer, man. It just tastes so good. And take it out, serve it on the side with some Minzithra cheese or some like a Parmesan if you want, but I like the Minzithra because it's sharper and a little more saltier. It's like dried ricotta cheese.
Okay.
And
sounds like you're going to get started cooking pretty early that day.
Pinot Noir? No, it's real easy. You can make, I don't know, 10, 12, 15, how many you want. How much does a roasting pan hold? And then it's real easy to serve. Maybe we'll do that for the column.
There you go.
You know, right? Give somebody an idea.
Might be a little late for Sunday, but for Friday.
I'll do it for Friday, and then Sunday maybe. Right now I'm planning on having the mutza column, so if you're listening to this then, you know, I want to thank everybody who wrote in on Facebook to help me out on the mutza thing, because Will blew it. And now, and you know what, Will? Your last act as Legman, before I'm I'm left without a leg, man. Thanks, Tribune. And probably die because the workload is so high. And if I die, it's all your fault. But the main thing is, I'm going to miss you, dude.
Hmm. I appreciate that, John. It's been quite a thrill. It's been 3 years. And a lot of it's actually
3 years feeling like 15.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of, you know, you get a lot of questions, people asking you, how is it, you know, working with John? I got a lot of that question just this weekend. I was hanging out with some of the Southtown veterans.
What were they saying? Oh, yeah, when you were having your orange juice augmented with certain potato.
That's beside the point, John. The point is, no, and I always say it. It's like I always say to everyone who asks me, I say, John is not only a great guy to work with, it's like me and him get along so well. It's like I love John. And it's not, you know.
Why did you look at Will? Why did you look at Jeff when you said you love me? Why didn't you look at me? Look at me now. I'm looking at you in the
eye. You're making it awkward and weird.
I'm not
now,
awkward.
John.
I'm secure in my manliness here. Look at I don't know. Nothing's wrong either way.
Not to disparage anybody, yes.
Right. But look, man, I love you, dude. It's been fun working with you.
Absolutely.
All right? You were great. You know, you're great. And I love you too, Jeff.
Well, thanks, John.
Jeff Carlin. I feel like, are we like the little Teletubbies now?
What?
Where's my little purple purse now? We can hug each other.
A rainbow coming out of my belly.
There you go. So, Will, what are you going to do now that you're leaving me and I have 4 columns to work a week to do without a leg man? Hmm. Besides writing my obit, in which I'm very nice, you have to make sure I'm very nice when I'm in the obit. What are you going to do for the paper?
Well, whatever I'm asked to do. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of, you know, project stuff that pops up, breaking news, you know, whatever the news of the day is, I'll be racing out to the scene. I suspect I probably will still be helping out if you need help.
You're a great reporter. You're going to be doing your own thing. Question: do you like to do, when you first start out on the city desk, again, you're going to be doing spot news at first, right? But are you also going to be doing some of those, you're thinking about some of those longer, beautiful feature pieces you did when you were working with me, that killer column that you wrote about, Black Lives Matter, where you kind of challenge people, or the saga of Two Gun Pete that should be a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate
you're
that.
You're going to be able to write those kind of longer pieces.
Yeah, but you're going to have to be much faster because the thing is the reporters, the everyday guys and gals who are in the paper, they write and they can turn out a very well-researched thing in a very short amount of time, sometimes 2 in a week. Sometimes 4. So I've got to be one of those guys who puts it out quickly and does the research and grabs and says and lets the public have it, you know?
Get up, go to work. The editor says hat and coat. Nobody wears a hat and coat anymore. But you're out the door with your pad in your pocket, driving a pool car to a scene, and then see what you see, right? And that's what we do for a living. And that's why we wanted to talk to you about it this way, so you could get a sense of what we really do and what we're really like.
But, John, before we go, you sat down with the Chicago Police Union.
Yeah.
The head. What was your takeaway from that?
Dean Angelo is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. And I sat down with him as the Tribune was doing its report. It's a poll story that says an overwhelming number of people in Chicago don't like the police and think that they're untrustworthy and everything's wrong with the police. Here's the thing. You don't like them till you need them. And he talked about being the thin blue line between the people who want to live and let live and the predators out there who are the beasts. And I think we forget that. I'm not trying to excuse the actions of those who commit crime as police officers. But what struck me was the numbers he gave me, Will. And you'll appreciate this, Will, and Jeff, too, because, Will, you've been a reporter. You see it. In the last 3 years, they've pulled 86,000 guns off the street. In each one of those, you pull a gun off the street, there's a potential for bad things to happen, right? Because you're not pulling them out of a box. You're grabbing them off someone who has them for a reason. Mm-hmm. And of all that, there's been I don't know, 300 related police shootings and something like that. So the number is very small compared to the number of guns they pull off. That said, I understand that. And I have a lot of friends who are cops. And they go through hell because they see the kind of brutality that we don't want to see. And if we tell them, right, if we tell our friends just the stuff that we see as reporters from being close to crime stories, mm-hmm. what do people do when you tell them what's really going on in Chicago, mm-hmm. Will, when they ask you?
No, most of the time it's just, it's like a movie to them. They don't see it. If you don't, even if you live in the city, but you live in a different neighborhood, you know, it's like, oh, that's not what I have to deal with, you know.
Right. I just went and got my ham and cheese croissant and my latte.
Right.
And then got on the 151 and came to Chicago, downtown, where I could, you know, make deals mm-hmm. on the phone and then come back. Mm-hmm. But other people deal with other stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of brutalizing behavior that they're subject to makes them brutal in some ways. This is not what Angelo said. This is what I'm saying.
Sure.
But it was really informative to sit down with him. Interestingly enough, I'm talking to him the morning there was a home invasion. You know that story? There's a home invasion on the south. Was that Derek Rose's house?
His childhood home.
His childhood wow. home, right? And he's talking about and the coppers, the detectives who are attached to the union, mm-hmm. right, who are there on the scene after a shooting, came down and we all talked together. It's amazing that, you know, in a gun battle, in a living room, in a bungalow, two cops can empty the clips, and the shooter can empty his gun, and the cops didn't get shot, right? They weren't hurt. And the shooter got three, I think, right? He took three?
I believe so.
Three, and he died. It's just amazing how, and if it had gone the other way, and two young cops from the south or northwest side of the city committed to protecting people in some of the most violent neighborhoods of the country were killed, maybe we'd play the bagpipes for them. And maybe some politician would make a speech about sacrifice. So it cuts both ways. There's the Van Dyke who freaked out and shouldn't have done what he did, and he will face murder. You know, he's up for murder. Here's a question I asked Angelo. Can Jason Van Dyke get a fair trial? And he responded by saying, he can't even get out of his car. How could he get a fair trial? And I started thinking of it. Regardless of how I think about it, I think I give the Van Dyke the first two shots at Laquan McDonald because he had the knife. After that, the kid's on the ground, I don't give him the 14. Whether that's murder or not is a question for a jury and a judge. But I'm thinking, given the politics, as both you guys, given the politics of this town now, where everything gets reduced, and Will is always good on this and he's always stressing it, to not deal with it in terms of race and politics. Just look at every case individually. But do you guys think that Jason Van Dyke can get a fair trial in this town with Anita Alvarez running against Kim Fox and Tony Preckwinkle and the whole racial argument being made time and time again for political purposes in a state's attorney's race, can this kid get a fair trial?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, the day that the last time Jason Van Dyke was in court, which was last Friday, that was when his attorney, Dan Herberts, mentioned a change of venue. And that same day I spoke with an attorney just to ask him, what do you think the chances of the trial being moved? And he said it's a pretty decent one, the gentleman I spoke with. I think it's probably it's burned so white hot in this city, it'd be hard to find somebody who didn't hear about it. Now, could you find somebody who's heard about it and seen it and didn't have an opinion? Anything is possible, but if short of that, it's probably needs to be moved someplace else.
Right, like where?
But that's the whole thing.
Like,
you know,
the Amish country in Pennsylvania?
It's the funny thing. It's funny you should mention that because they said it's risks wherever you go. If you might tilt it one way if you go to DuPage, or you'll tilt it another way going to Will County. They say
this is not Richard Daley's nephew who's going to take a walk for 90 days and watch cable while he's in the for killing somebody. Mm-hmm. This is a copper who killed this black kid and all of a sudden everyone loves the black kid now because, you know, he's like the everyone built, we build things up that don't have anything to do with what really, you know, what the issue is, because we all bring our politics to it, right?
Right.
So how could he get a trial? Jeff, Will says that he couldn't get a fair trial. What do you think?
I mean, I'm with Will to most of that. I mean, everyone is assumed that they have seen this. Now, that doesn't mean that they're prejudiced, because there have been people on both sides talking about what's going on. I think he's, to remove any doubt of a fair trial, or to give him a fair trial if he wants that perception to be removed, he's got to leave Chicago. He's got to go out of Cook. And
where
because
are you
going
to have it? Like Page?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Will's point is that there are prejudices. There are, you know, different cultural differences between these areas that I don't know that you do. I mean, at that point, where can you go? Are you going to go to take it to Springfield? I mean,
we're not going to go to Southern Indiana.
Right.
All right. Because then it'll be, you know, then you're going to come up. Nothing against my friends down there, but you know what I mean? You'll have different views. There'll be different racial politics wherever you go. But it can't be in Chicago. It can't be in Cook County. It can't be in the Chicago metropolitan area.
Yeah.
Because that.
DeKalb County, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
That could be a jury. Yeah. A jury of DeKalb County people. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Some county. Some place that's not part of the constant politics of Chicago. Not that, again, I'm prejudiced too. I think he goes down for it. He shot the guy twice. The kid goes, lies on the ground, falls to the ground, and then he fills the body with 14 more. That, to me, is a little bit overdone.
Well, it's going to be tighter than that, because it's the fact that he's backing away as he's shot. I think that's what a lot of the critics of it are focusing on, is the fact that he's backing away and then he gets shot. In fact, I've heard you say that very same thing. If he's lunging toward it, as it's said in the police reports, you've got another thing, but the video doesn't show that. So he's got an uphill battle.
I slightly disagree just on the point of way he's moving. And not that he's lunging. By no means is he lunging.
But his feet turn toward the officer.
His feet turn. If you watch that center line on the road, yeah. He's essentially hugging it, and he veers away from it towards them. He's not lunging by any means. But
how's this?
That's a tough thing. I mean, that right there is a tough thing to know from. But aside from the evidence that we're presenting right here, which is strong, I think it overcomes any sort of bias.
Here's what's interesting, that Angelo, you brought up something. Mm-hmm. You reminded me of the Dean Angelo, FOP president, who teaches criminology, and he's a professor as well, talks about this. You remember, if you look at the video, you'll see the car, the police car, right? The way the doors open from the shooter car, Van Dyke's car, the doors open the wrong way. The nose of the car should have been the other way tactically. Because when they step out of the car, they're not behind the door. The door is not a shield that it should be in the best tactical situation. It should be a shield. The door should serve as a shield between the officer and the alleged threat or assailant or whatever you want to call it. Because they were turned the other way and a little to the side, you open the door. This is Angelo's argument. You open the door, and you're right on it. So you're not. We're looking at it from a distance from the other car. They're right on it. Mm-hmm. He steps, and kind of veers a little bit toward him, and then he fires. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking. I still don't let him off the hook on it, but I can see the argument being made tactically, and that's the whole idea. You know. Court case, you want to confuse a jury or put some kind of doubt in their mind.
I think you definitely get a good thing by saying that the officer felt in danger because they fought it incorrectly tactically by opening the doors, being closer to the offender than being further away from them. That's definitely a very interesting way to attach it, but
I don't think it'll work. I just don't. This has been the Chicago Way with John Cass, with my friend and the mastermind of this operation, Jeff Carlin, and my friend and now former leg man, Will Lee. Dude, it's been great. Talk to you soon.